Okay, I'm going to talk about within-host dynamics of resistance. Before I start, I should say something about this talk. I gave this almost exactly the same talk 2 weeks ago here. And on Friday and during weekend, I felt bad that I have to repeat it again. But yesterday, when I saw new faces, I was really happy. Okay, new audience, and they never heard of this. Until this morning, that Catherine actually ruined my talk, because she talked about what I wanted to say, and I hope you can bear with me for another 20 minutes or so. So what I'm going to talk about is the same thing that Catherine said: viral replication, mutation, and then I'm going to look at different type of mutants. One, for example, with low fitness, the other one with higher fitness, that is kind of competing with wild type. Then I put everything in the context of immune response. I don't want to talk about too much about antibodies, but it's mostly related to cellular immune responses. Then we look at the effect of treatment in that context. We develop a simple model, at least simple enough for this study. And then we can see what we can get out of that model in terms of when resistance is likely to emerge, what is the effect of treatment, and what efficacy of drugs is basically optimal for treating individuals. And then some conclusion and future direction. One point before I start is I don't want to emphasize any quantitative figures here. No parameters, no values, nothing. I just want to give some kind of proof of concept that look at mostly qualitative behavior. And the reason that I don't want to emphasize quantitative behavior or quantitative measures here is that I don't really have any good estimates of many of parameters here, but I just went through the literature and what seemed plausible, I just put it in the model and simulate, see what happens. Okay, here is my model. It's not a still mathematical, it's biology. I don't want to talk about it too much because she talked about it this morning a lot. So what happens is the virus comes, infects the target cell. Some mechanism happens inside the nucleus that Catherine explained. And then after that, viral assembly happens and a bunch of viruses coming out. So either wild type, the same strain as the original virus, or they may actually go through some kind of mutation and different mutants come up with different fitnesses. So for me, what is important is just having replication and mutation here. And then I want to put this mechanism of infectious process in the context of adaptive immune response. The first part of it is antibody neutralizing antibody titers, neutralizing basically virus, that this virus cannot further infect other target cells. And the next part of it, the second component of adaptive immune response, is basically CTL that we talked about it a lot, and differentiation of colon expansion, differentiation of CD8, CD4, and all those mechanisms, and then production of CTLs. CTLs killing infected cells, basically blocking replication of the virus. Antibodies neutralizing virus, they cannot infect more target cells. Okay, so here's what I want to say before we go to the model. As previous talk showed, that during influenza infection, if you don't have pre-existing immunity, generally, influenza is very fast replicating pathogen. So it can actually infect the majority of target cells within 2 and 3 days post-infection. Okay, so by that time, infection is pretty much over, or day 4 or 5, infection is over. So one thing which is important in influenza infection is to have either pre-existing immunity to block this fast replication of the virus, or somehow prevent the replication of the virus. So a few years ago, actually probably in 2006 or 5, Woodard and others published a paper in Proceeding Royal Society that in management of acute infection, it's probably best to delay a start of treatment until immune response reaches a certain threshold, and then after that, hit the infection with, you know, drug therapy. And the reason for that is that we think that if we delay the start of treatment, in that window, immune response comes up faster, and therefore, once we hit it with antiviral drugs, it's very unlikely to for resistance to emerge, because immune response at that level could prevent spread or, you know, emergence of resistance at the individual level. Unfortunately, that doesn't work for influenza, because influenza is very fast replicating pathogen, as we saw in previous talks. And if we don't have pre-existing immunity, by day 2-3, infection is sort of over. If you delay more than that, then therapy is basically ineffective. At the same time, immune response comes up, but very late in primary infection. So we have to use treatment, and we have to use it very early if we don't have pre-existing immunity. So that's the problem. But when you use it very early, then you end up having this problem of treatment, the problem of resistance, because at the same time, when you use it early, it blocks replication of wild type to a large degree. At the same time, it gives a longer period of selection for resistance to emerge. So if we have mutants that they have fitness comparable to fitness of wild type, this might cause a big problem, because you block replication of wild type, the resistant type that has really good fitness, it may actually emerge. So what I want to put in my model is I'm looking at, so now the question is, under what condition actually those mutants could actually prevail at the individual level. So here is a simple model. I'm looking at target cells, I call it T, infected cells and new viruses. So let's say I have viruses sensitive to drugs, and they start infecting target cells. They create infected cells, and then infected cells actually produce new viruses. So some of those mutants may be resistant, but I'm looking at a resistant virus. They may produce resistant viruses. I'm looking at virus that is resistant, but it may not have really high fitness. So the fitness is low for this guy. And then they may go a few rounds of replication and infect in cells and infect other target cells and produce some infected cells. But then in that process, they may also gain some advantage by further mutating and increasing the fitness of virus. So in that process, I may produce some viruses with high fitness. Then they start infecting, again, target cells, and they go on. So if I block this part, what I end up having is basically these guys can infect a lot. So here is my model. It's pretty simple. Well, at least to me. What I want to emphasize here is this parameter. Forget about everything else, because there's no value here. It's just a structure. What I want to emphasize is this parameter. This is actually my the number of pre-existing CTS, or T-cell response, basically. So these guys are basically killing infected cells here. And this is actually production from naive cells, and this is actually CM that I'm trying to see what is the role of this CM, which is the number of pre-existing T cells in the context of infection and drug resistance. I don't have what?
Loss of C.
Oh, loss of C. No, I didn't put it there because it probably doesn't matter in the context of 6-7 days. If the CTL generally, CTLs live much longer. Short answer, because in 6-7 days doesn't matter. You can add it there, but it's, the decay rate is so low that it doesn't make any difference. So here is, okay, before I go further, I want to test that model in a simpler scenario. So if I get rid of treatment and no resistance, ignore all of those extra factors, and I just look at the effect of this parameter or this the number of pre-existing cells in my model, I'll come up with some of the simulations here. So for a second, forget about this pink curve here, and then I'll explain at the end what happened. But what I'm simulating here is that, like, the black one is basically when I don't have any kind of pre-existing immunity. So CM is zero, okay? So you can see that it, infection peaks about 15 days and 2 and 3, and probably majority of target cells are infected. As I increase the number of T cells, then I start to see a little bit difference in the infection process. So it delays a little bit, and then also it reduces the viral titers. So increasing number of cells leads to further delay in the infectious process. At the same time, it lowers the magnitude of viral titers. So I could say two things. One is that if you have pre-existing immunity, you probably see much longer incubation period in infected individuals. That's because the infection is pushed back. The second thing is, why you see so many infected individuals asymptomatic with no clinical disease? That's because viral titer is not that high. And this is actually showing that scenario that if I have higher level of pre-existing immunity, I have lower level of infectiousness, and therefore I don't show that much symptoms. And therefore a lot of individuals, even seasonal influenza, for example, they're going through a symptomatic infection. So I want to put it in terms of treatment and existence of compensatory mutation. Yeah. Sure. Because when you have higher level of immunity, it actually blocks replication of the virus. It delays the process of coming up. Because good question. I'm coming to that later too. That's why I said you ignore to this part, to this curve actually. It delays to some degree, but not to this extent that is here. And I guess maybe I address that question here. There are several reasons, but the most likely one is the problem of model. Because in generally in homogeneous models, if you try to suppress epidemic or, you know, peak of viral titers, then the nature of model leads to some expansion. So you can have very short periods of epidemic, or in this case, viral infection, and very large peak, or you can have very short, very low peak of viral titer, but it leads to longer period. But I have to think about it, how to actually solve that problem. I already started. I think maybe if we put it in terms of a network model or individual-based model, because in this scenario, I'm looking at homogeneous structures, so everything is mixed, but in the actual infection, it's probably not that way. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
That might be another reason, yeah. I tried actually to put it in like split naive and memory cells. Try to see if there, for example, the rate of replication of memory cells or expansion of memory cells could solve that problem, but it's still that problem is there. But you're right. I'm not trying to make any quantitative argument, but still the effect is there, that if you have pre-existing immunity, you're going to have lower infectious area, infectious magnitude. Okay, so timelines of infection, this is in the context of now resistance. So what I'm looking here is, where is blue one? Oh, yeah. A blue curve is the sensitive virus, and green curves are resistance with low fitness. So in blue curves, this is actually without any treatment, the solid curve. The dotted curve is actually the scenario in which I started treatment on day two. You can see it's not a big difference between not starting any treatment and starting very late. So there is no big difference here. And this dashed one is actually starting treatment on day one, relatively early during the epidemic. So when you look at the resistance with low fitness, it's not going to be big difference, I mean, big problem in terms of going beyond the detection level, and it's probably not going to cause any problem. The problem comes to the picture. This is actually in the absence of pre-existing immunity. I ignored that C and everything. So the problem comes to the picture when I have actually compensatory mutations, which is with higher fitness, almost comparable, not comparable, in this case actually 60% is relatively lower than a wild type, but it's still much higher than 10% fitness of low resistance. So again, the same scenario, if I start very late, I'm not going to get any problem even with compensatory mutation, because wild type strain already infected majority of target cells that could be infected with another strain. But if I start treatment on day one, then I block replication of the sensitive strain and I give a chance to compensatory mutants to actually go high, but it takes a little bit time for them to reach a peak of viral titers. And then the same scenario happens in mutants with high fitness. So that's again in absence of pre-existing immunity. In the presence of pre-existing immunity, that's actually a very different scenario, because treatment doesn't matter much, and whether you have those high mutants or you don't have it, in either case, immune response will take care of it. So whether you start early treatment or late treatment, if you have really good pre-existing immunity, there's no problem. So one thing that we could say in general is that if you have compensatory mutations and you have pre-existing immunity, that's not a problem. But if you don't have pre-existing immunity, those mutants could be a big problem in the presence of drug treatment. So here is something else that might be interesting. I don't know if that has really a practical value, but at least it's true in theory. And I guess that Yogi Berra said, in theory and practice are the same. In practice, they're different. So, but at least this is okay in theory. Well, what I'm doing here is that I'm looking at the start of treatment since onset of infection. I'm looking at drug efficacy. Drug efficacy is actually the parameter in my model that blocks replication of sensitive strain. So in this scenario, without any pre-existing immunity, the problem is if I have really, really good drug in the presence of high fitness mutants, if I have really good drugs, I'm going to end up having big problem, because the more you block replication of sensitive virus, the better chance for compensatory mutations to actually arise. So if those mutants are around, I'm better off to actually not use really good drugs. I have to use drugs that have much lower efficacy. On the other hand, if I actually delay this process or delay the start of treatment, then up to some stage is okay, but then I have to actually increase the efficacy of my drug significantly to reduce the total amount of viral titers. So for those guys that are actually dealing with practice, this probably doesn't make sense to say that, oh, I want a drug if I have high resistance or high fitness, resistance with high fitness around, so I don't want really good drugs. I want something, a drug that has really kind of medium efficacy. The same scenario actually happens in the population level. I think some previous talks in 2 weeks ago, they talked about it, and this is actually a scenario in population level. So the difference is, well, this is again timeline in during the course of epidemic season, for example. And instead of drug efficacy that I had in previous picture, I have here treatment level, which means the number of infected individuals that I treat. So you can see that if I start very, very early during the course of epidemic and I hit the epidemic with very high treatment levels, then I'm going to have a huge problem with a spread of resistance in the population. If I wait too long and then start treatment, then I'm going to have again big problem, but this is because wild type already spread in the population to a large degree, so drugs are not effective. So there is an optimal region here for a start of treatment versus the level of treatment, that if I'm starting very early, I have to keep an intermediate level of treatment, and as I go later during the epidemic, then there's a sharp increase in treatment level to reduce the number of total number of infection. So it's kind of mimicking the same situation at the individual level in terms of viral replication. So summary, I think I said all of it. What I missed is, I don't think if I missed any of it. So important part is here. So things that are not correct in my model, they're not wrong, but they're not actually very consistent with real scenario. So I try to just simplify, simple as possible. I may have actually simplified more than what is necessary, but still it gives me some good picture. One thing that I didn't include here, and I assume that the production of adaptive immune response is actually proportional to the number of infected cells, as Andy has mentioned about that. So if you can expand the model to actually include the colon expansion. I have the model already that is a little bit complicated to simulate, plus I don't have really good parameter values for many of those parameters I have in my model. Plus, I did not include the innate immune response in it. That's also another factor. I guess Catherine talked about it this morning. Plus, one thing else that I'm missing, and again, I doubt if that's going to change a whole lot in terms of qualitative behavior, but it's still interesting to see what is the effect. And that's basically delay between cell infection and virus release. So usually it takes about 4 to 6 hours. Between the time the cell is infected until virus is released. So this part you can expand on it. And then, I didn't have really accurate estimates of parameters that I just tested with some of the parameters cited in the literature. The other problem that I have is that, and I guess I talked to Benny around lunchtime what this problem is. We have seen some resistance in past few years in some regions that we didn't have that much use of drugs. And resistance actually spread over the course of influenza season. And then for some reason, that resistance disappeared. And the sensitive pathogen again reestablished itself. So that's still puzzling to me, that what is the phenomena that this could happen? That if you have a very highly transmissible resistance around over a few years, what causes actually that resistance to suddenly disappear? That's it.